Welcome to Season 5 of Ye Olde Dragons Library, the storytelling podcast. Each episode this season will be a chapter from the second book in the Enchanted Castle Archives, The Beastly Beauty. In Season 1, our heroine, Ash, was warned multiple times to stay away from the Enchanted Castle, and if she ever saw it coming toward her, to run. Now, she finds the Enchanted Castle, or, perhaps more accurately, it finds her. Will prophecy come true? Can she escape when she finds out the truth of Cecil's warning that every castle wants a princess? Listen and find out. Chapter 15. Stop making excuses, Ash snarled at herself when she realized she had been standing on that drawbridge, thinking until her temples throbbed. I made a promise. I have to keep it. I just don't dare trust anything for however long I stay here. She looked behind herself at the trail through the forest. The landscape outside the castle had changed. The trail she had followed was gone. When she went into the castle, apple trees filled the air with soft, tangy perfume. Now the ruby gleam of cherries almost overwhelmed the green of the leaves. The castle had kept moving. "Fang, can you find the way back to our camp?" she whispered, even though it was probably useless to do so. He rose up on his hind legs, resting one paw against her thigh, and nodded solemnly. "All right, then. We're going up to the mirror room. Then we're out of here as fast as we can move, and going straight back to the camp." Pulling her shoulders back, taking a couple deep breaths, Ash turned around and headed back across the drawbridge and through the gates and up the steps into the castle. The mirror room doors swung open before Ash put her foot on the top step of the stairs. She clenched her fists and feared the silver braid of the crown bent just slightly. Fang hopped ahead of her, paused on the threshold, then looked back at her and chirped, and continued inside. "Oh, well done, dear," Izalova greeted her. "I was worried for you, but since I haven't been able to see inside the libraries since those brutes invaded, I had no idea what was done, nor how to break that nasty bit of spell work. The books adore you." "Yes, I can see that, to the point of wanting to make me a prisoner." "They'll protect you now. Ask them to keep the rest of the castle from playing tricks on you, and they will." "Yes, playing tricks," Ash said. "How can I trust you? You didn't warn me." "Yes." The mirror's swirls of green and blue darkened slightly. "You can see it that way, can't you? I'm affected and influenced just as much by the spirit of the castle as everything in it. Over the years, I've tried to warn so many adventurers and princesses and noble youths. The more I warn them, the more mistakes they make. I've managed to keep some from being trapped by not giving clear warnings. So much depends on the cleverness of the heroes who make it up the stairs to consult with me. You can spend as much time here in safety as you want. As long as you leave before nightfall and you don't sleep here, you don't eat here, you don't take anything out of the castle. I'm sorry. I know you need those books, but you'll just have to study and make notes. Knowledge you can take. Things you can hold in your hand, you must leave behind." "That makes sense, I suppose." Ash sighed, and with that breath went so much of the angry energy that had made her tremble. Weight pressed on her shoulders and dragged on her legs, and her sense of time returned, like a slap against the back of her head. She had gone all day without eating. How much time had she lost in the library? "Thank you for your help." She turned to leave, then felt the crown slide across her leg. She turned back and held it out. "What do I do with this? I don't have to wear it, do I?" "Yes, unfortunately. There are two more suits of armor coming up the stairs right now, with more crowns to offer you. I suggest you wear it to get out through the doors. Then put it in a safe place where you can find it when you come back. That crown will be your safe pass, in and out. The books will protect you from the rest of the castle's inhabitants, so you can wear the crown safely when you're in the library. just be sure you do come back. You don't want the suits of armor, or the larger pieces of furniture, and especially not the carriages or wagons, to come hunting for you. Ash nodded. She wished she could find the mental image of being chased by wagons and carriages without horses amusing, but she was too tired. She thanked Izalova, tamping down a small surge of resentment and fear that she was still being tricked, and headed out the doors. The suits of armor were on the landing between the first and second floors. She glared at them and slapped the crown back on her head. They turned to watch her as she descended the stairs and moved aside when she reached them. They stayed on the landing as she reached the main doors and stepped outside. Ash nearly forgot to find a safe place to leave the crown, on castle grounds and yet outside. She found several decorative ledges of stone all around the doorway and stood on her toes to reach as high as possible. The ledge was wide enough for the crown to hang from it, catching securely so it couldn't be knocked off by breezes during the night. Then Ash crossed the drawbridge. She wanted dearly to run, but she was too tired and too stubborn to display just how uneasy the castle made her. Fang hopped ahead of her. No need to ask him to lead the way. She studied the sky, trying to determine how much time she had until the next change. Izalova had said the changes were sometimes short of 12 hours, sometimes more than 12. Sometimes the portals opened to 4 places in sequence, sometimes 5. Ash had the awful feeling she hadn't asked several important questions, starting with if the portals opened in the same sequence all the time or they changed order. "Not that I plan on staying here that long to find out such details," she muttered, as she followed Fang down an animal trail that seemed to wobble drunkenly. She couldn't see more than 12 paces down the trail before it curved to the right or left. Definitely not the path she had followed before. Then, to her relief, they came out on the stream. At least she hoped this was the same stream where she had camped. If so, had the castle moved closer to her camp while she was inside? Should she be worried about that? Something crashed among the trees behind her. Was that the sound a suit of armor made when it tripped over roots or ran into low-hanging branches? A snort escaped her at the mental image of one of those persistent suits of armor knocking a helmet off and having to fumble about, trying to find it and put it back on. Or maybe tripping and banging into a trunk and knocking an arm loose. If there was nothing inside the iron casing, what if there was something inside, even if just a magical mist that made it move? That thought made her shiver. She tried to shove it out of her mind. Fang chirped happily and bounced back to meet her. His ears pointed back and to the right at such a tight angle, her own ears ached for him. Just how did he do that without breaking his ears off at the root? She found Garen placidly grazing on the grass at the edge of the slope covered over by moss. Ash breathed her thanks and stumbled a few steps, feeling a little weak with relief. First thing she wanted was a long drink of water. All that dust she had been breathing and wiping off her face and hands made her dry, inside and out. No, first thing was to check the portal. Fang hopped toward the overhang and their camp and squeaked, sounding a little worried when she didn't follow him. "We need to see if the portal changed," she told him. He let out a gusting sigh, sounding so much like Justiciar Camwell. Ash wondered if he was teasing her. He leaped high, getting ahead of her in just a few bounds. The portal still showed the pool and that spot of underwater light. Ash shook her head, refusing to even contemplate trying to dive that deep and swim to that light. There was no indication of what she would find when she came up out of the water on the other side. That was too much danger. Plus, how could she carry her gear or bring her horse? Fang certainly wouldn't go through that particular portal with her. He had hated water any deeper than his head ever since that plunge through the waterfall to escape Morris. "How long do you..." Ash flinched as sparks danced along her fingertips. She took 2 steps back as more sparks swirled around the edges of the pool. The rock stretched upward, turning into a massive tree, and the portal became a bulging sort of slit in the center of the trunk. The sides of the passageway were smooth, streaked with moss in a few places. On the other side was darkness, with starlight at the top. A warm breeze, scented with something sweetly fruity, reached through to tickle her nose. Then a stronger swirling of breeze followed, damp, scented with salt. Had this portal opened somewhere near the sea as well? Where did it open? Could she go through and explore for a few days and come back here? How long would it take her to map all the places the portals opened out to from the enchanted forest? Ash took several more steps back, stunned by the thought. Why would she want to spend her time doing that? Someone had already figured out how to use the portals scattered through the enchanted forest to travel around the world. If a selfish, illiterate boor like King Ruprecht had figured it out, granted with the help of those half-baked magicians Cecil had so despised, then others could as well, and use the portals to do more than steal books. Understanding the pathways of the enchanted forest was knowledge. Philby lived for knowledge. People with the power to defend the innocent and defenseless, who accepted that responsibility, could use the knowledge of the pathways for good purposes, not for selfish ones. One thing at a time, Ash muttered, and turned her back on the portal that opened into some place that was currently night. She wondered how long it would stay night there, since, as Izalova had told her, the difference between the enchanted forest and the outside world was a factor of 30. She couldn't, and quite frankly didn't, want to waste time sitting and watching the light change. She was thirsty, she was hungry, and she needed to write down everything she had learned and done today in her journal before she forgot a single detail. Fang woke Ash when dawn was merely a faint hint of chilly silver streaks across the sky. She took time to splash water on her face. She still felt the dusty, dry effects of yesterday's explorations. Then she followed him back to the portal, stumbling a few times on the laces of her boots, which she hadn't taken the time to tie. The scent of roses touched her nose before she saw the pale golden light of a winter afternoon coming through the tunnel. Ash went to her knees, grinning and blinking away totally ridiculous tears. Winter, when she had come through in late fall. 2 months had passed in Camerlang, but only 2 days here. What had happened at Castle Fairhold? Had Lathia struck? Had Justice R. Camwell reappeared? Ready to go home, Fang? He chirped and bounced up and down in place, and she laughed. She wiped the damp from her eyes and struggled to her feet, then stopped and bent down to tie her bootlaces before heading back to camp. Her journal still sat out, the page held down with her ivory pen to allow the last lines she had written to dry. She had written until her hand cramped and her eyes blurred with sticky weariness last night. Ash leaned over to read it as she chewed on a dried apricot. A pang shot through her at the words she had written to remind herself. "I did promise to go back, didn't I?" she whispered, more to herself than to Fang. Instinct and common sense told her not to break any promises she had made in the enchanted castle. She sighed. "I need to find out what those books say about spirit rings." She packed her journal in her satchel, along with 2 pens, the pot of ink, trail bread, and several spiced meat sticks and a packet of raisins. Ash picketed Garen on a long lead so he could reach the water and the grass. She took 12 steps away from the camp, then remembered the water flask. How could she have forgotten it after that long, dry, dusty day? The drawbridge was down, but the main doors into the castle stayed shut when Ash approached. She stretched her senses, waiting for the first sound of approaching iron feet, trying to detect the sensation of magical eyes watching her. All was silent, as if the castle were sleeping, or perhaps empty of all life and awareness. She took the crown down from the stone ledge. Ash paused, hand raised, shivering at the sensation that someone, many someones, had inhaled sharply in anticipation. She looked down at Fang, who stayed by her side, close enough he threatened to interfere with her steps. He flipped his ears, looking unconcerned. Was she wrong to depend on Fang to sense trouble before it approached? He was sometimes more prone to make trouble than help her avoid it. With another deep breath, Ash rested the crown as lightly as she could on her head. Dozens of someones exhaled, sighing. Relief, if not happiness. The main doors swung open. Well, Izalova had told her the crown was her pass inside. Would it keep away those insistent suits of armor? Inside the entry hallway, the doors to the library were all closed. Had they closed on their own, or had the books closed the doors? Or had the clothes or housekeeping breezes, or whatever had been competing with the books for her attention, closed the doors in pique? Ash walked slowly, listening, waiting for some further reaction from the castle. She thought the central doors to the library rattled a little, in preparation for opening. Then she thought of something. A sound like a sigh, maybe a whimper from dusty, papery throats, filtered up the stairs after her as she raced up, two steps at a time, to the mirror room. "Good morning, Izalova," she called, as the doors swung open before her. "Welcome back, dear. Ready for another day of exploring and adventure?" the magic mirror greeted her. "As much as I can learn," Ash said, after a pause to choose her words carefully. Just like unwise wishes, unwise words, even if they weren't promises, could trap her. "You warned me not to eat anything the castle offers me. Is it safe for me to eat what I bring in with me, or should I just not eat or drink anything inside the castle?" "Ah, and the child learns swiftly," she murmured, ending on a bubbling sigh of laughter. "Your food is safe today, but bring fresh food tomorrow, if you have anything left over today. The longer something stays in the castle, the stronger the tendency for it to become part of the castle." Ash nearly asked, "And does that include me?" But she shuddered at the certainty that merely speaking the words would make them true. Silence was wisdom. "Thank you." She turned to leave, then thought of something. "Have you heard anything about Justiciar Camwell? He vanished when Lord Diggory tried to warn him that Lathia was a danger." "I will listen," the mirror promised. "There may be chatter. I can only listen, not ask. Check back this evening before you go back to your camp." "Thank you." Ash promised herself she would be gone long before evening threw shadows across the forest and through the castle's windows. A suit of armor waited next to the library doors, both arms stretched out, with four crowns strung on each arm. Beautiful crowns, glittering with jewels like ice, intricate swirls of engraving in the silver and gold, the cloth encrusted with diamond dust. Ash felt those watchful eyes from inside the helmet and had to swallow hard to get enough moisture in her mouth to speak. Politeness, as Lady Charlotte had always maintained, covered over many perilous situations. "Thank you, but I have work to do, and those crowns are so heavy and so beautiful, I'd be afraid of them falling off my head and breaking." She reached for the doorknob. The doors into the library slammed open, and a tidal wave of books moved back, opening a clear pathway across the gleaming tile floor to the table in the center aisle of the room. Ash stepped into the room quickly, half expecting the suit of armor to try to grab her and stop her, maybe force a crown onto her head. "Good morning, my friends," she said, mouth still dry. "I've come to study. Will you help me?" 1,000 pages rustled. To her relief, the air stayed clear, no clouds of dust gushing outward. "Would you mind closing the doors so nobody can interrupt me?" A muffled roar of movement behind her had her spinning around on her heel to see that pile of books moving like a wave, pushing the doors closed and then piling up against them. Ash smiled, but found it hard to hold on to her smile when she had a sudden image of those books staying there, refusing to move when she tried to leave in mid-afternoon. She couldn't afford to be late returning to the portal and have the tunnel of roses and snow close, keeping her here 2 more days, 2 more months. "Thank you. That's perfect." She glanced down at Fang, who chirped at her and flipped his ears in his signal she interpreted as meaning, "I'm off to explore. Don't get into any trouble while I'm gone." Then he bounced away. "Would it be too much trouble for the books on spirit rings to come back? I especially need to learn from them." At the table, two books popped upright, waggling to get her attention. Ash grinned as she headed down the aisle to the table. She wondered how long it would take until she grew so used to this magical help she took it for granted. She stumbled on her third step. Grow used to this? The idea of growing used to this implied she planned on staying here for some time. A long time. Perhaps living here. Help me, she whispered, to Athiosius and to the ring. She reached up and pressed on her courier badge and the ring hidden behind it. Then she thought of something. Would it help? Would it bring more cooperation and hopefully protection from the books? Or make them resentful and unwilling to help her? There was no way of knowing until she tried. Ash unpinned her badge as she settled at the table. She slid the ring off the back and put it on the table in the clear spot in the center. This is my friend. He's a spirit ring. Some awful magic has silenced him. I don't know if he can hear or see me, if he's been cut off from all the other spirit rings who are his friends. This research is to help him. He would love to meet all of you and learn from you. We've talked often about the library here in the Enchanted Castle and all the treasures of knowledge you contain. Will you help me awaken him? Give him his ears and voice back? Another rustling of thousands of pages. Then the book on the history of spirit rings flopped down flat on the table and snapped its cover open. Ash read until her eyes felt dusty dry again. Disappointingly, she found very little that she and the ring hadn't already discussed. Everything was theory, repetition of folk tales and speculations, rather than actual factual history of spirit rings. When she sat up and arched her back and tried to straighten her shoulders after being bent for more than an hour of reading, a touch on her ankle startled a squeak out of her. She looked down, half expecting those dancing slippers from yesterday, some other magical piece of clothing, or perhaps a rat after all. A bedraggled little book wobbled on its end and tapped her foot. Its leather cover had worn away in spots, so the wooden base of its cover showed through. She bent down and picked it up, and found it small enough to fit in her hand. It flipped open, showing her where the threads of the binding had been torn out of the pages. Clearly, it wanted mending. "Well, it would do me some good to get up and move, wouldn't it?" she murmured. "But I have so very much studying to do. Please don't bring me all the injured books, not all at once." Her voice seemed to echo hollowly at her, and she felt rather ungrateful. She didn't want to refuse to help, because she felt as Friar Ipswich did, that books were sacred and deserved protecting and decent care and respect. "I'll try to mend one book every time I come in here to study. How about that?" She flinched, wishing she had stopped to think a little longer before she made that promise. She hadn't promised to come back, had she? If she never came back, the books couldn't accuse her of breaking her promise, could they? A few stitches with sturdy thread and a few swipes of glue solved the problem for the little book. Ash spread it open flat and told it to lie still and let the glue set before it moved again. She hurried back to her study table and reached for the water flask. Silently thanking Blaz for his gift of nearly endless fresh water, she took a long drink. Before she finished the final swallow, a bang-clang of metal on metal sounded from some distance, and cool air spiraled around her. Movement from the corner of her eye had her looking up. A shawl in a peacock's feather pattern floated down slowly toward her, the edges flapping like wings. Ash swallowed down the first dozen things she thought of saying, some of them angry, some of them frightened, some of them irritated.
We hope you enjoyed today's chapter. For more information on all the books and series featured in this podcast, or to purchase the ebook or audiobook for future reading and listening pleasure, please visit yeolddragonbooks.com. You can also find more information about our books and purchase ebooks on our Patreon page, Ye Old Dragons Library. Please consider supporting the podcast to gain access to free stories or discounts, or a chance to purchase a new book in advance of release. Thanks for listening to this episode of Ye Old Dragons Library.